for those Sunday school teachers now. Have a little more grace with them. James, you look like you got a lot of sleep last night. Look real spry. Susan looks a little tired, but you know, you look like you got a lot of sleep. All right, Ecclesiastes chapter 11. Ecclesiastes chapter 11. All right, we're winding down the book. We're almost to the end here, so it's getting a little bit more, getting a lot more comparison spiritually on some things. So he draws out some attention. Verse 1, Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verse 1, cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. Again, this is verses used many a times in regard to witnessing, the idea of putting out the word of God. You cast it upon the waters and then it's going to come back after many days. You can have a couple different applications in this regard. You think about casting thy bread upon the water. Oftentimes money is referred to as bread, right? And the idea is you go put your money out. And if you're generous in your money and you're helpful with your money, generally, those things will come back in many days. So it's a picture of generosity. Look at Luke chapter 6. The idea is about doing something without worrying about the expectation of getting something back. And that's why when we look at both applications, you'll get a good understanding of that. Many a times, because we're humans and we tend to be selfish, we only do what we do hoping that there'll be a return to it. In other words, if there's not going to be some reciprocation to what I'm going to do, why in the world would I do it? Well, spiritually, we're to give and not worry about it coming back. Look at Luke chapter 6, verse 38. He says, give and it shall be given unto you, good measure, pressed down and shaken together, running over, shall men give unto your bosom. For with the same measure that ye meet withal, it shall be measured to you again. So when you think about generosity, and of course in the scripture, generosity is a good attribute to have. You give, and you give without the expectation of getting something back. It's, you know, 1 Corinthians 13 with charity. But the idea is if you're very generous and you do the right thing, more than likely you'll have a good measure come back. Now a lot of people will be real, they'll be real charismatic with it, and they'll get to the point, well, I'm going to give out and then, expect this great wealth to come back. But again, that's not always how it works out. Oftentimes with generosity, you'll do something, and when it does come back to you, a lot of times you forget what you've already done. And because we're unthankful, we don't always recognize how the Lord is doing some things. But again, you have some generosity there that would be a good picture of it. Look at Psalm 126. It's a picture of putting out the word. It's a picture of putting out the word. Of course, the bread. Man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God. So putting out the word is to be exercised as a believer. He's to cast his bread upon the waters. And we'll look at that a little bit more here in a second too. But the object is you're to go out there and you're to cast it. You're to get rid of it. You're to put it out there. And whether that book is going out through verbal testimony, whether it's through tracts, whether it's through just speaking to people, we need to learn to get the word out there. Psalm 126 and verse 5. He says, they that sow in tears shall reap in joy. He that goeth forth and weepeth, bearing precious seed, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him. So we're to spread the word. We're to cast the word out. You ought not keep it all to yourselves. I mean, you need to be generous when it comes to putting out the word of God. I know there's some frustration. Yes, brother. That was Psalm 126 and verse 3, I believe I read. Psalm 126, 3, or 5 through 6. I'm sorry, not 3 through 6. 5 through 6 is what I covered. So the idea is that you put the word out there, and as you put the word out, sooner or later, something's going to come back. And the fact is, it's just like fishing. If you fish enough, sooner or later, you're going to catch a fish. It's just like anything. If you hunt enough, sooner or later you'll kill a deer. You fish enough, you do enough things, you're going to get something that's going to come about it. Look at Revelation chapter 17, give you a little bit here where he says, cast thy bread upon the waters. John writes, and he identifies waters as a picture of people. So that's why when we say we're casting the bread out there, we're giving it to people. And when you get that book out there, sooner or later, it's going to come back. It doesn't always come back the way you expect it to come back. And many a times you'll go out and you'll witness and talk to people and maybe pass out tracts, and you'll see no fruit from that initial effort. But then somewhere along the line, you'll see somebody get saved. You'll get a chance to witness to someone out of the blue that you didn't spend a lot of time in. How many times have you witnessed to someone for a long, long time and you spend a lot of time dealing with them and you get absolutely nowhere, and then you run into one person and you witness, give them a track, all of a sudden they show interest, they get saved. I mean, you don't know how it's going to come back. The idea is just put the bread on the waters. You just keep casting it out there. It's like feeding fish. Just throw the bread out there. Let the fish come to it. Revelation chapter 17 and verse 15. Revelation 17, 15. Notice here when he's giving the definitions here of what he's seeing there in Revelation. John writes, and he saith unto me, Revelation 17, 15. The waters which thou sawest where the whore sitteth are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. So when you think about casting the bread upon the water, you're casting that bread everywhere. You're not limiting it just to one place. He says it's peoples and nations and tongues. It's all different kinds of people. And when you're getting the word out there, that's what you do. Now we're limited when we're putting the word out. We're limited to our area. We can't. How do you do anything in Brazil? How do you do anything in China? How do you do anything in Japan? Well, you can't. Well, that's why we have missionaries. They go out and do that. It's just like if you enjoy salmon, how many of you have the time to go salmon fishing? Or halibut. You like halibut? Who's going to go to Alaska to get halibut? It doesn't matter what it is, lobster or whatever. You don't have the means to do that, so what do? You go to the grocery store, you go buy it, but someone had to go out and do it. And the idea with missionaries is we just send them out, and their job is to do it. We take care of our area, they take care of their area, and the Lord gives the fruit from it. So he says, cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. Now notice again, as we look at that generosity, give a portion to seven, and also to eight, for thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth. Now notice again, when you look at that generosity, and this is always a struggle, he says give a portion to seven, but then he says give a portion to eight. I mean, the idea is that when you're being generous, you ought to be generous. And you don't know how your generosity might help someone. You don't know how your generosity is going to affect somebody. Last year when Brother Falk was here, we took up the offering for the people there in Myanmar, and then they go into lockdown and they have no way to go and get food because they can't go to work. But we sent money so they can get rice, and then they distributed the rice. I mean, you don't know what evil's going to come. Brother, what was it down there in Zimbabwe when we got chickens for Brother Russell? Who knew that, you know, Corona was going to hit? And here we buy them these chickens to help them out and get them the feed, and then COVID hits, and now they've got provision. Because you don't know. That's why it's so important just to be wise about things. You have to pray, and you need to be sensitive with whatever the Lord would have you to be. You got to be wise so that you're not taken advantage of, because people will take advantage of your generosity, right? I mean, that's just true. But again, if you're going with the right heart and you're not worrying about that, you'll be able to do some things, and the Lord's able to get hold of your heart to do some things. Notice verse 3, if the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. And if the tree fall toward the south or toward the north, in the place where the tree falleth, there it shall be. He that observeth the wind shall not sow, and he that regardeth the clouds shall not reap. Now, in the context of the passage, you have, again, dual application. You have the application of putting the word out there. The word goes out there, and you sow it, and you're just letting the Lord do the results. But as you go and do something for the Lord, one of the greatest struggles is we always tend to look at the opposition or look at all of the adversity or look at all the trouble rather than just doing what we're supposed to do. So he lays out this fact that clouds are full of rain and they empty themselves upon the earth. Can you stop the clouds? Well, no. Can you make the clouds drop the rain? No. You have no control over it. You have a tree in your yard. What is going to keep that tree from falling in a wind? Unless you cut the tree down, you have no control over all that. But how many people waste their time worrying about what they're going to do and not doing it because of something else? It's like the guy says, well, I can't go out and work. It's going to rain today. I worked with my stepdad with concrete, and I couldn't tell you how many times in the morning it would be, we got to get ready to go, and it's going to rain. Oh, well, I guess we're going to have to call it off. So we call off the job because it's raining, and by noon, it's not raining. It's nice. No concrete got poured. Now, you say, well, yeah, but you can't go pour concrete in rain. Yeah, but sometimes you need to get to the job and get things prepped and go there and maybe get a little wet and maybe it's going to clear up. If all you do is regard the opposition and all the trouble that's going on, you'll never do anything. It's like witnessing. If you wait for everything to be perfect to witness to someone, you'll never witness to anybody. If you wait for everything to, for the weather to cooperate and everything just to go smooth, it's like when we went up, I guess it's been 12 years now, we went up to Canada. I remember we went door knocking up there and we got there and it rained every single day. Well, we just traveled in a van for how many hours, and we went and I told Brother Hines, I said, we're going to pass out tracts. We'll get ponchos and we'll just pass out tracts, go door knocking, do what we got to do, because I didn't travel to where do we go, Quebec, just to travel to go to Quebec. So you had to go out and do it. You say, what was the result? I don't know. Does it really matter? If you start considering the opposition or all the trouble all the time, you'll never do anything. He that observeth the wind shall not sow. He that regardeth the clouds shall not reap. Now, that doesn't mean you ought to not use any discretion. I mean, certainly I wouldn't go out and plant my field right now just because it's, 2 weeks ago it was 70 degrees. Well, I certainly wouldn't go out and plant my field with my crops. But you notice all the farmers have been plowing and they've been getting everything ready so that when the weather is right, then they're going to have time to plow. It's the old saying, make hay while it's hay season. Boy, when it's time to cut hay, you don't monkey around. Those farmers, they're smart. When they got the open door, they get out there and get that hay cut, and they want to get it baled and put it up because they don't know when the rain's going to come. So they try to work those things to their advantage. Verse 5, as thou knowest, so in regard to the sowing, the reaping, the putting out the word of God, anything, as thou knowest, what is the way of the Spirit, nor how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child, even so thou knowest not the works of God who maketh all. One of the things that Solomon, being the wisest man that ever lived, is the fact of the matter is, with all the knowledge he had, there were a great many things he didn't know. And what I have found in life is too many people get too preoccupied with things that they don't know. And there's a danger to that. If there's some things you will just never know. I mean, he gives you two examples. What is the way of the Spirit, and how do the bones grow in the womb of her that is with child? You'll never know that stuff. And yet people will spend all this time. How much money is spent by politicians for studies about things that they want to try to find out? I mean, they'll do all these different studies, and I can't think of anything off the top of my head. But millions of dollars are spent about why people are in poverty in Saginaw, but they're not spent in poverty in Bay City. What is the driving force? People. You'll never know. I mean, you'll never, there's things that are known that they can't figure out. They can't figure out right now why there is a shortage of workers in America right now. They can't figure that out. Well, a knucklehead can figure out that if you give somebody the equivalent of $30,000 a year, why would they work? Between food and unemployment and all the stimulus, an idiot can figure that out. If I give you $30,000, why would you work? Most of those people don't even make $30,000. That's a known, that's an easy one. But then there's always someone trying to figure out things that are not known. Christians get in trouble a lot of times because they get studying the Bible, and they'll study, and they'll study things so much they get in trouble. I've watched guys get studying, one of the things recently, a guy gets studying the Trinity, and he gets studying the Trinity and gets so in depth with it. The Trinity is, it's a mystery. You're never going to understand the Godhead. And by the time the guy's all done studying it, you know what he is? Now he believes that Jesus is a created God, and he doesn't even believe in the Trinity. You say, what's the result of it? Trying to know something that you can't know. There are just some things you can't know. And no matter how much study you get to it, you're not always going to get the answers. The age-old question, why do the righteous suffer? I mean, you can study that out, but you realize that some people go through things just because the Lord allows it. And there is no definitive great answer to it. But people will spend all that time trying to get answers. Look at chapter 3, Ecclesiastes 3. Now, I'm not telling you not to study things, but just be careful. There's something you just got to quit trying to figure out. Ecclesiastes chapter 3. My father-in-law used to, when he was a kid, he'd plant, was it a seed or was it a turtle egg or something? I can't remember. I think it was a seed. Planted some seed, and then every day he would go off to school, and he's walking to school, he'd dig it up to see what it's doing. You're not going to understand how that works. Now, I realize today they've gone, science has gone so far, it's like an egg. You see an egg, and you know, little chicken comes out of that egg. Well, now, I mean, I've seen science where they take that egg and they fertilize it and they put it in like a little cup and they have cellophane over it, and you can watch that egg develop. And that's cool. But how does that happen? You could have all the scientific answers to that, but you don't know. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. And some things you're just never going to figure out. Ecclesiastes 3, look at verse 11. He hath made everything beautiful in his time. Now think about that. He, God, hath made everything beautiful in his time. It's never in our time. It's always a struggle. Also, he set the world in their heart so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. Man will never figure it out. Man is bent trying to figure out how man got here. God tells you, gives you the book. He tells you exactly how man got here, how everything is created, and man doesn't like what God tells them. So what do? They come up with their own theories and their own ideas, and they still can't even agree with the answer. And yet the Bible just opens up, in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth, and gives you all the stuff. That's all you need to know. So then here comes the skeptic. He says, well, where was God before Genesis 1:1? You don't need to know that. Why would you waste time trying to figure out where God was before Genesis 1:1? And don't you know many a people have sat there trying to figure out where God was before Genesis 1:1, and they became a skeptic because they couldn't figure out the fact that God is God. He's eternal. See, we try to wrap God up in a little bow and try to put him in a little box, and you try to understand, you realize that, you know, we believe in a young earth, we believe that the earth is about 6,000 years old, and so on and so forth. But you realize when you're looking at eternity, a lot of things went on before this place was created. I mean, he starts it out, in the beginning, time, God created the heaven and the earth. For how long ago was that? Don't know. I mean, the fact of the matter is, you'll never figure it out. And anybody that tries to figure that stuff out, they will go crazy. That's why scientists, they're all mad. That's why they call them mad scientists. They don't even know. You listen to Fauci talking about things about the mask and no mask and the virus. They talk about things they don't even understand. They don't even know, and they talk like they know. They don't know anything. And you can study all you want. And as soon as they think they've got it figured out, what happens? The Lord will send a variant of something. I mean, it's just how it goes. Look over to chapter 8. Chapter 8. So just be careful trying to figure things out. Some things you just have to accept what God says. I mean, the Christian life is 99% faith. Now, God gives you a book, and this is our authority, and I believe this book from cover to cover. But the fact of the matter is, even having this book and knowing it's God's book, without faith, this book is nothing. You have to have faith. You can have the answer to how God created everything, but if you don't have faith, now all you have is what the world has, is knowledge. Ecclesiastes chapter 8, what did I say, verse 17. Then I beheld all the work of God, that a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. Because though a man labor to seek it out, yet he shall not find it. Yea, further, though a wise man think to know it, yet shall he not be able to find it. I mean, they think they know. So many Christians, listen, Christian, you cannot just put God in a scholarship-only realm. You cannot just sit here and just say, everything is black and white. Now, we believe there's things in this book that are black and white, but yet with faith, you still have to have faith. I mean, the very fact that you got saved. How many times after you got saved, you doubted you got saved? And you got resaved over and over and over again. And then as you grow and as you get in the book, you finally realize, oh, the time I did was the time, but my faith just wasn't, I hadn't grown. And now I've got the answers and I've got the fact. I mean, the Bible says that the Lord will never leave you nor forsake you. I mean, that's true, right? But again, you still have to have faith to believe that, because there's times when you're praying, you feel like the Lord's not there, right? I mean, I've been married to my wife for 30 years and she always sleeps in bed. I don't always sleep in bed. I can't sleep, so I'm up and I'm in the chair, I'm in the sofa. And sometimes I'll lay in bed and I'll be sleeping, I'll roll over, and I can't find her. And I'm feeling around, and where's she at? So I find her and wake her up. Oh, you're there, okay. Well, she was there the whole time. I was just oblivious to it. I know it's a silly illustration, but the Lord's always there. Sometimes you're just oblivious to what's going on. Hebrews 11. And you have to get your faith to grow. Some things you just have to accept by faith. I mean, it's amazing how science can accept things by faith. They just accept it was the Big Bang Theory with no evidence whatsoever, with no perpetual fruit of it, right? I mean, there is nothing that shows evolution is true. Absolutely nothing. Because if it was true, you would still see processes of evolution going on. It wouldn't just stop, right? I mean, it wouldn't end. So they have no proof. They might tell you they have a fossil record or this, that, and the other, but they have no proof. You go anywhere, and you go down to the deepest, darkest center of Africa where they say where man came from, you know what you find? Men and women just like you. They've not changed any. I mean, some of them are still living in rough conditions. You'd think evolution would get you at least to a car. Some don't even have that. So here's what he says, Hebrews 11:6. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. There are some things that the Lord may not show you, and he may never give you the answers to. And you say, well, then how is he the rewarder of them that diligently seek him? He gives you peace just to accept the answer that I don't know. There's just some things you're not going to know. Why is it you can witness to this person 100 times and they reject the gospel, and this guy over here, you talk to him once and he gets saved? Why is that? I don't know. There's no answer to it. Why is it you can raise children and you can raise them all the same and they all turn out different? You ever figure that one out? Can't figure it out. I mean, you're never going to figure those things out. Why is it you have two smart parents and you get dumb kids? Or you got two dumb parents. No, better yet, how do you get two dumb parents that get smart kids? That's even worse. You want to talk about slap in the face, you get two idiots that don't know nothing raise a kid that's a genius. You take two smart people that know a lot and they're educated and they raise idiots. How do you figure that out? Don't know. You aren't never going to figure it out. You can't just assume because you're smart, you're going to have smart kids. Better yet, if you're handsome and pretty, you might have ugly kids. That's just how it goes. I mean, I've seen pictures of my dad and mom when they were younger. They looked pretty attractive, and I got ripped off. Everybody in my family's skinny. Everybody, they're all thin. I'm the one that has to fight the fat gene. That's not fair. You can't figure that out. You go crazy trying to figure those things out. I know it's foolish, but it's no different than someone that has to be able to figure out everything before they can believe in God. You know, I mean, there's just some things you just have to accept that God is, and he's a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. So he says, there are some things there that thou knowest not, what is the way of the spirit, or how the bones do grow in the womb, or of her that is with child. Even so, thou knowest not the works of God, who maketh all, period. You don't know the works of God. You don't. How do you understand someone being born again? Do you understand that? I just know that I'm born again. I know it. I have no doubts I'm born again, but I don't understand how it took place, how the Lord did that miraculous thing, so I just accept it. You can't sit and worry about it. In the morning sow thy seed, in the evening withhold not thy hand, for thou knowest not whether thou shalt prosper, either this or that, or whether they both shall be alike good. The idea is that, now again, back to the word, doing what the Lord tells you to do. And you can apply this to sowing the word. This can just be applied to you doing what God tells you to do. You go out in the morning, you do what God tells you to do. You go out in the evening, you do what God tells you to do. You don't know whether it's going to prosper. You don't know. I mean, the fact of the matter is, I was driving through town today, and I'm thinking, you know, for 31 years, we've door knocked this town. I'm tired of door knocking this town. I'm just tired of it. Because nothing comes of it. And yet, I'm told to keep doing it. Because I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe it'll be the 32nd year someone will get saved. Maybe it'll be the 34th year your family member will end up getting saved. We don't know, right? Because you don't know. Look at Matthew 13. There are no guarantees on anything. You're just supposed to do it. Listen, your job is just to do what God tells you to do. His job is to bring the fruit from it. Every farmer goes out, and again, I'm watching them out there. They're getting the fields. They don't know that when they plant those fields, it's going to make it. They assume. They plant the seed. They watch the Farmer's Almanac. They do all that stuff. And then you get an early frost, and you'll watch all the corn, or a late frost, and the corn gets all burned up. And there comes a point in time, once you're past a certain point, you can't replant. What's the guarantee? How many years have you seen, remember years back when they get these late frosts and up in Traverse City and it's burning up all the cherry blossoms and they're out there running the water trying to save it? You don't know. I mean, where's the frost come from? Yeah, have you figured that part out? Notice Matthew 13. Here's the parable of the sower of the seed. And he spake unto them many things in parables, saying, Matthew 13, verse 3, behold, a sower went forth to sow, and when he sowed, some seeds fell by the wayside, and the fowls came and devoured them up. Some fell upon stony places, where they had not much earth, wherewith they sprung up, because they had no deepness of earth. And when the sun was up, they were scorched, and because they had no root, they withered away. Some fell among thorns, and the thorns sprung up and choked them, but others fell into good ground and brought forth fruit, some a hundredfold, some 60-fold, some 30. I mean, you go out and plant a field. And yeah, you got the good ground that's been worked, but that seed falls all over the place. And you don't know what's going to happen when you plant that seed. Your job is just to plant the seed. Your job is just to do right. You don't know how it's going to work out. Any parent in here knows this. You raise your children and you try to teach them and train them to do right. But there comes a point in time, they're going to make their own decisions. I mean, you don't know how it's going to play out. But so that doesn't mean you don't do the right thing. This is the mentality of the world today is, well, they're probably going to be a junkie and a druggie anyhow, so I'm just going to let them do it now. And I might as well put them on birth control because they're going to go out and mess around. So might as well just, you know, that way I don't have any grandkids. That's the world's mentality. Instead of just doing the right thing. Now, if you do the right thing and your kid goes out and they do the wrong thing, well, you deal with it and you take care of it, but the fact of the matter is you don't know how it's going to play out. You hope you know. I mean, you're wishful thinking. Isaiah 55:11. And when it comes to the things of God, you're just to do what the Lord tells you to do. You're to sow the word, you're to witness, you're to pray, you're to do everything you possibly can to try to get the truth out there. But ultimately, it's not in your hands. So don't get disgusted. For years, I used to get disgusted. Come into church, preach, nothing happens, and just come in, and it seems like you're spinning your wheels. And I finally come to the realization, the Lord had shown me, listen, it's not you. It's me. And if they won't do what I tell them to do, there is nothing that I can do to make you do what God wants you to do. I'm not going to sit up here and beat an altar call so I can feel better because there's a bunch of people at the altar. That's just to make me feel better. Now, that doesn't mean don't come to the altar call. I can come to the altar, still do the altar. But I don't do long invitations. Why? I never have, because I figure it's in the Lord's hands. If the Lord's going to move you, He's going to move you. No, I cannot guilt anybody. I don't know how to guilt a person. I try. The only person I can guilt fairly well is Timmy. He's about it. And even then, what was it the other day? He did something. He went to Chinese. He goes to Chinese and, you know, goes uptown. And for anything Timmy does, you know, it's a chore. For Timmy to go to Chinese, it's not just an easy thing. He's got to hobble himself up there, hobble back, and he comes back and he's got lunch for him and Faith. I said, "You didn't ask me if I wanted anything?" And he just kind of got stone cold look on his face and, "Oh, I thought you weren't eating this stuff." "Yeah, but you could ask." "Well, you want an egg roll?" I said, "No, I don't want an egg roll, but you could have asked me." You know, I tried to guilt him. He went up there, ate his lunch. Faith ate her lunch. Nobody was bothered. I'm going to be at Brother Mark's, man. When it's one of these days, I'm going to be in a chair rocking back and forth. Yeah. Isaiah 55, verse 11. Isaiah 55:11. If the Lord's not in it, nothing's going to happen. That's back to my point. I don't know where all that come from. So shall my word be that goeth forth out of my mouth. It shall not return unto me void. But it shall accomplish that which I please, and it shall prosper in the thing whereunto I sent it. So you go out and witness, and you say, "Well, man, I just didn't. Nobody got saved. Nobody listened." Yeah, but the Lord does accomplish something. Because now you got the word to somebody. And when they stand at the great white throne judgment and say, "Well, I didn't know," the Lord's going to pull it up and say, on June 31st at 11 o'clock in the afternoon, this guy was on the street corner preaching. You walked by. He offered you a track. You said no. Now it accomplished something. You don't know what the Lord's going to do. You don't know the guy that takes the track and holds on to it and something happens later on. You don't know. It's all in the Lord's hands. Your job is just to sow the seed. And don't withhold your hand. Sow it in the morning. Sow it in the evening. You sow it both times. Sow it as much as you can. The Lord's one going to give the fruit on it. All right, we'll stop there. We're going a little long. So we'll grab verse 7 next week.